For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. Welcome in to another episode of the Week 7 Recap of the Tiger Minor League Report podcast. I'm Riley Castillo. Alongside is Chris Brown and David this evening. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. And we just got back a little while ago. Actually, we got back earlier this afternoon just in time to watch the Tigers win today 4-2 over Cleveland. Nice job by the bullpen. Everybody getting it done. But I decided to come home early, only not because, of course, the podcast is one part of it too, but it was just nice to able to catch some of the minor league or the Tigers game as a whole. I did not, truthfully, I watched maybe a little bit of the Toledo game, but that was about it. And everything else was just been catching up on. So I started watching games from last couple days, and we were in Erie. We'll get to the Erie recap here in a second, because there's plenty to talk about there, including similar, just say similar opinions about things that we noticed. Yeah, it was weird. It never really does that. But so yeah, we have plenty to discuss, including our Erie trip, what's going on with Michigan, all sorts of fun stuff. But let's get started with Toledo and Cody Clemens. The calm up chants are now,
that should be his nickname, right?
Yeah, it should be. Yeah,
Calm up Clemens.
Yeah, there's a groundswell. Yeah. That was a term I heard earlier today when I was watching when I got home after the Tigers game, I watched the Kids in the Hall documentary, and they were talking about groundswell. And that would be the case. Cody Clemens has a groundswell to him right now. And he had, how many triples did he have today, Chris? Two?
He had two triples the other day, I think. Two triples on the week. He's got six for the year. You don't really necessarily think of him as a speed demon, but he's just, your triples are sometimes just a matter of luck, but we saw the one the other day. He had was like an inch from a home run, hit off the top of the wall in dead center field and then bounced up in the air for like another 2 seconds. So I'm checking now. I think he might lead all of minor league baseball with triples.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes like it's always fun to see like the different facets of triples because like you said, Chris, some of them can be like little wall scrapers, but other times like you hit it just in the right place at just the right park and you're gonna get lucky.
Yeah, the park definitely plays a big part in it. Comerica is a big triples park. So yeah, Clemens actually is second by himself. Other two guys, I guess he's third. Mason Wynn and Carson Williams, who are both legitimate prospects, have seven triples in the year already, and fewer games too. But it was basically he was like a one man offense this week for Toledo. Toledo went 2-4. Where were they playing? Indianapolis. Yeah. Yeah. But nobody else, I think, had an OPS over like 750 on the week. Jay Myers had four RBIs, but it was the Cody Clemens show. 9-for-24, two doubles, two triples, a home run, two walks, eight RBIs. I mean, the Tigers theoretically know what they're doing. If they thought Cody Clemens could help them win, Cody Clemens would be up. They're not keeping him down to punish him or something like that. They're not like messing with service time. They don't think that he can provide them with what they need right now. So I know it's a bummer for him. He's just going to keep putting up numbers, but good for him for not sulking or whatever and actually hitting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. I think we touched on it a couple shows ago with Wilmer Flores being down in Toledo and such. But, if we call him up, it's like, do you see him being a starter like day one when we call him up, honestly?
No, unless somebody gets hurt. That's the thing. Like he really is just an injury replacement, and the people he would be replacing haven't gotten injured yet. That's we've got to hammer this home as long as we can. But every time we put a highlight of him doing something good, it's call him up Clemens.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing though. It's good to have him. It's good to see him producing. Yeah, and but that's the thing. Like we call him up, and he's not going to be getting those consistent at bats, and he's not going to have that that rhythm that he has of like having that daily schedule of, I know that I'm going to come to the park and I'm going to have this regimen. And I know that I'm going to get at least three at-bats today. And I can work on all these different swings I have in mind. And But yeah, it's nice to see him getting consistent at bats and producing.
Yeah. Also, go ahead, Chris.
There's just one last thing, Raj, I want to touch on is, you know, from the outside, unless we ask the managers, we haven't been down to talk to play manager Lloyd, but we don't know exactly what they're being asked to work on. And what we've talked about before is Cody Clemens is not walking this year, which is a little bit odd because he's always walked a decent amount. And his swinging strike rate is up by like 3% this year from last year. But it almost feels like that's been a good thing for him. He's hitting the ball a lot more consistently this year. He's just like he's swinging more in general and doing more damage. But who knows if they want him to walk more. I don't know. I don't know if they gave him a directive to swing more or if he's just like, yeah, screw this, I'm going to swing. So, it's tough to know.
You know, there's hitting... one – go ahead.
No, I mean, I just want to throw it out there that the best number in his four minor league seasons is he's hitting .365 on balls in play. So – That's pretty elite right now. I don't know if he'd be willing to subdue walks for that type of number, but yeah, I mean, 8 walks, that's kind of concerning. But at the end of the day, he's like, when he's hitting the ball, then there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be producing.
Yeah, there's the one of the things that I did notice, you guys were mentioning the strikeouts, but it seems like maybe it's just me. But when I was looking at Kerry Carpenter, I was doing the article today and finishing up the notes from our live look. His strikeout rate also, he was never, I mean, it was around 20% last year. It's at 30% this year. So maybe it's a philosophy that's changed where they tell him to swing more and be less looking for their pitches. I don't know. Again, until we talk to somebody like Ryan Garko, something along those effects, I think that it could be a philosophy change. Who knows? But I couldn't help but notice that the rates across all four affiliates are up.
Yeah, strikeout rates in general. Boy, there are an awful lot of strikeouts here. We'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. You do wonder if almost like part of the development process is they've been telling them to like it breaks their roles. Like, okay, you know what? You're just going to be a run producer. Like, I mean, that feels a little old school, but. And generally speaking, you know, the big movement over the last few years was, okay, get on base and you know, get your pitch to hit and do damage on it. But I wonder if certain guys are like, you know what, getting on base is great, but you've got the power to do damage and we want you to do damage. And maybe that's what's going on. Maybe there's nothing, you know, it's like 40 games or whatever. Maybe it's just kind of a small sample thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's May, late May baseball. It's like, you know, stuff can always change. They could say, like, you know, hey, you've shown that you can really drive the ball. Because, like, the video we put up on Twitter recently of him having that opposite field double that he absolutely just destroyed off the wall, that was, like, a very impressive hit, in my opinion. But, yeah, it's like the coaches could say soon, you know, like, we've seen that you have the ability to drive the ball to all fields and really just really start putting the ball in play. But, yeah, like, let's see if you can start getting on base a little bit more.
And that's what Detroit, a lot of looking at OPS is. We had somebody DM me earlier about some of the OPS is across the system. And that is definitely the walk rate is a concern too with a lot of that. But getting back to Toledo this week, they were down in Indianapolis and the playing the Pirates AAA affiliate. And as far as how they went in terms of a team wise, it was not a good week, as we mentioned earlier. Only winning 2 games in the series. They split a doubleheader on the 19th after rain. Rain played a part in everything. And no, Jeremy, the ticker's new. I just put that up. I decided that it'd just be a good idea to have the ticker up. And it didn't dawn me that I could have done it before, but actually correction, not just fact of pure laziness. Or maybe because I get so worried about.
Have there are like a dozen different templates you've got set on there, and some of them have the ticker going across, and some of them have other stuff. And
yeah,
I don't know if you can like change what the ticker says on the fly. That would always be fun. But
yes, we can. I can always change on the fly. But I just thought about it.
Like, shut up your face.
You know, like we could put team lead or team. Like for example, Cody Clemens leads all the minor leaguers in hits with 50, and then Cole Keith, by the way, is 46. He's second, and. Kerry Carpenter's third with 40. So, but stuff like that. That's actually a really good idea for some of the suggestions. But let's get back to, again, there was a new type. There is a new Mudhen, by the way, that came aboard, and that's Brendan Davis, the former Angel prospect who hit 30 home runs last year. It was the Angels minor league player of the year. And then they had him for roster crunch. They had to cut him. And as far as he was sent to Toledo right away, and rightfully so, because right now, in terms of the outfield situation, Badu's down right now. You see a lot more Dane Meyers playing the outfield versus the infield, where he's played a lot of first base at Erie, but he's been playing the outfield all week. But I like the move for Davis. Like, the more I find out about him, I know Scott Bentley mentioned him, and I did a little bit of research on him today. It's a good bat, and he can play multiple positions. So, but as far as in terms of getting some game action, I have not seen him yet in game action as of yet. Did he play in the game today?
I watched him a little bit today as you were driving. I had the luxury of watching videos and cutting stuff up while Raj was driving for 4.5 hours. He went 2-for-4 today, I think, with an RBI double. And he's got an interesting batting stance. It's almost like a video game stance. Like, it's closed. I don't know how to describe it, but, like, you know, it's not a stance you see much anymore. He's kind of tall and thin. But, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of kind of new faces in Toledo this week. From Brendan Davis, Sam Howard, I think, made his debut this week.
Dane Meyers is with Toledo as well.
Dane Meyers, but he's been up and down a little bit. But, yeah, he's up there. Trace Thompson made his debut, I think, with Toledo this week. Dario Gardea, Garrett Hill. Like, it was just a lot of player movement. And this is all, like, a concatenation from the injuries in Detroit are just kind of cascading down at Toledo and Erie and West Michigan now. So
it's interesting to see. Sorry to cut you off, Chris, but, yeah, it's interesting to see Trace Thompson in the system now, because, like, I don't know if you guys remember circa 2018-19 when he was getting groomed to be, like, the future center fielder for the White Sox. It's like, he certainly has a lot of athletic potential. Clay Thompson's little brother hopefully does pretty decent in the system.
Yeah, I know. I remember him as, I don't know if he was a top 100 prospect. He was definitely a well-regarded prospect. It's been like a dozen years ago now, I think. But, that's how you know that somebody just loves baseball, right? That here's a dude who's comes from a family of other athletes. I don't think he's necessarily hurting for money if he had to. You know, he's not playing for that. He's playing because he loves baseball, and he loves – was he 31 now? He's been on probably a dozen different teams, if not more. And, still out there grinding, trying to get his shot. And – it's not a bad situation for him, as Raj mentioned. Like, you know, that outfield is kind of a walking wounded right now. You got Reyes out, you got Badu out again. One more injury, and it could be Trace Thompson time in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, and actually to really kick off the Toledo section, if you don't mind, there's one detail I want to touch on.
All right.
Yeah, and that's Garrett Hill. And it's like, I know that I'm going to say this line a couple times, but Raj, you mentioned it last week, that box scores don't tell the whole story. And that was, I think, that story with Garrett Hill tonight. 5 innings, 3 runs, 5 strikeouts. And if he hadn't had that 5th inning, then we would have talked about that being a fantastic outing. But I thought it was really nice to see, like, first start in Toledo, he really took the bull by the horns with it and really just went after hitters. Like, I think in the first inning, he struck out 2 of 3. It's just nice to see him going after guys in the new league. And, yeah, it's nice to see him pitching good.
Yeah, that was another one that I was fortunate enough to be able to watch a little bit as we were driving home. And, yeah, he looked exactly in that first inning. It was 9 pitches, 2 strikeouts, and a groundout. He looked exactly like he's been looking in West Michigan and Erie over the last 2 years. He was a little bit wilder than usual. I think he walked 4 guys. And, saying wildness is kind of out of character for him. And he gave up a home run, which he doesn't do a ton of. But it kind of reminded me of Bo Brisky's first start with Toledo earlier this year, where he made a couple mistakes and paid for them and was not entirely consistent with his command. And you know what? We heard that with Wilmer Flores when he debuted in Erie. Again, we'll get to that. But sometimes guys can get nervous a little bit when they're making their debut at a newer level. You never know, you're suddenly facing these different level of hitters who are supposed to be better, right? And so you just maybe a little bit too careful. You're worried about them, you know, punishing you, and then they do actually once, and then you start to question yourself and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think 5 innings, 3 runs, I think 2 earned. Is that right?
Yeah.
A pretty pretty solid AAA debut from a guy that, you know, we've talked about for a few years now, and he seems to be kind of on the precipice of the big leagues.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you look at if you're really going to depth on his start, it's like I think he got just a tad bit rattled by the home run in the fifth. But yeah, it's like you look at those first 4 innings, and he like all 4 of those innings, he was setting him down 1-2-3, and you know it's like you mentioned, Chris, like when you're it's your first start in a new league, new team, you're gonna have new teammates, like literally all everything around you is different aside from the game you're playing. So like just the littlest thing might just be that needle in the haystack, or like the straw that broke the camel's back. Excuse me. Yeah, it's
the needle that broke the haystack's back. The other debut that I didn't even notice, and I actually texted Riley about this last night. He had to drive home through a monsoon. There were flash flood warnings, and then I don't know if we didn't tweet it out, but like there was a wall of water coming down in front of my hotel room door. It's ridiculous. But yeah, as we were sitting there, you know, in our separate rooms doing our thing, I noticed that Dario Gardea had been called up to Toledo, which was kind of wild because he hasn't pitched in Erie. He jumped Erie. He was down in Lakeland or West Michigan, and he had a nice debut. He gave up a hit to his first batter, a double, but then 2 strikeouts and a ground out. Just kind of, and he's got a legit big league breaking ball. It's a slider that's tight and with late movement under the hands of a lefty. So, you know, fastball's like 92, 94. And he also threw a changeup. So I don't know. He's like a random kind of under the radar reliever, relief only guy. So you never, they're not really prospects per se, but. You know, a couple bounces here, a bad breaks, and the next thing you know, Dario Gardea is in the bullpen, and everybody's going, "Who's this guy?" Well, we saw him, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah, especially because I mean, there you pulled up his spin information from last year that's over at minor league splits, and he really has really good spin rates on its curve and its slider, and he's from Mexico, which and the Tigers don't really have a lot of relievers or pitchers from Mexico in their system. Traditionally speaking, so it was good to see. And one of the things about what I like about him too is the fact that he can throw that slider away from lefties is pretty good. Excuse me, not a slider. I think it's a curve or just looks like something off speed away from left-handed batters. And he's a guy who could really at some point. Again, the way everything's going right now, the Tigers, by the way, tomorrow have Elvin Rodriguez. And I heard this through Matt Shepard today, that they'll be the 11th pitcher the Tigers have had start this year, which is the most since 1939, I believe it was. But it was a good pull there by Matt Shepard. And again, it's a starter, but Elvin was used out of the bullpen for the Tigers this year, but they think enough of Elvin that he will continue to be a starter. So this opens up an opportunity for somebody like Gardea to continue to make his way upward, but that's quite a jump in terms of from low A all the way up to triple A.
Oh yeah, yeah. You go ahead.
Are you good?
Okay, yeah. Rod, you mentioned that he's good at like outside breaking balls to lefties. It's like I'm gonna give my 2 cent my Walmart color analysis on this as a baseball player and say that like the way that you always want your breaking ball to do, and like I know you guys know this, but like you always want it to be like sweeping, and you want to get like those outside calls when you're pitching on the same side, but like when you're throwing a breaking ball, you always want to get it out in front, right? You always want to make sure you have that leverage on it when you're coming down on it. It's like so you can really just get the depth in it. When you're throwing it to the other side, you're not gonna want to get it inside because you really have to hook it off, and like it's hard to hit that inside zone because it can either just flatten out and it'll just be like an 83 mile an hour batting practice fastball, or it's just gonna be like a wild pitch and go behind the batter, just right through the catcher. So yeah, if a pitcher can do that, then that's in my opinion, that's an impressive thing.
You don't want to you want to avoid the dreaded cement mixer. We actually, for people who haven't seen him pitch,
I'm pulling it up right now, actually. So if anybody who's watching the live stream can watch it here still. Hey. Oh, yeah. That actually works too. Thank you, Chris.
Just because it's only like, 20 seconds long or 40 seconds long or whatever, but okay. Error record. Sorry. Just kind of interesting. We talked before about sometimes when guys make big leaps in the system, it's just because they are org guys and there's just a need. But I don't think this was strictly that. I think there were plenty of guys they could have called up from Erie if they just needed a body and then sent back down. I think they kind of like it. His numbers this year are kind of ridiculous. It's like 29 strikeouts and 2 walks in 19 innings. Like, all right, well, let's see what we have here, if we have anything. So, and he looked pretty good. So, who knows? Barrio Gordea. Remember the name.
Yes, sir. Before we move on to Erie, just one more little tidbit. Unless you guys have anything about Toledo, just one quick thing I want to touch on is Jamie Walker, who had a pretty decent day with Toledo. I want to give him credit where credit is due. Even though he only went 1-for-2 today, which, like, people are going to look at that and be like, why are you giving him credit? But if you watch the at-bats that he took, I was looking at the sprays on it, and these are pretty decent highlights.
No, go ahead, David. I'm just sort of showing
highlights. I'm sorry. Yeah, you look at the at-bats that he had over the course of the game, and just, if there's one thing that you want to see out of hitters, it's being able to grind through at-bats and just really go after what's yours, and that's getting on base. And that's exactly what Jamie Walker did today. It's like, first at-bat he had was 5 pitches. Didn't do anything with it, but unfortunately. But yeah, he worked the count pretty good, 5 pitches. Second at-bat, 7 pitches. And I think, that one was a walk. 7 pitches. It's like, by the time you get to like 4, you're already sweating a little bit and the anxiety starts creeping. Third inning, 2 pitches, but that led to a single, so he got on base and that was amazing. And fourth at bat, that was an intentional walk, but still, just counts today was his,
Jamie Westbrook,
what did I say? I'm sorry.
No, I think you're saying Jamie Walker, which is the great 2006 reliever, lefty reliever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was trying to make sure there wasn't, is there another Walker on there that I didn't miss? But anyway, he's another guy that they went out and targeted this year. Yeah. We talked about, it was something that Rogelio really talked about, was the lack of depth in the system heading into the season. And they've tried to address that a little bit through these kind of, seems like biweekly minor league free agent acquisitions, and Westbrook was the first one, I think. But since then, we've seen Trace Thompson, we've seen Brendan Davis. So you never know when one of these guys is going to get a chance. If the Tigers keep playing the way they have, then maybe all of them will get a chance by the end of the year.
But even, and that's the thing that I've noticed too, especially with the signing of Davis, is that if they are going to, they're going to leave no stone unturned. If they're, and again, we saw the release this week of Paul Richen. He's gone. And so if you're not going to be producing, and to be fair though, he had some shoulder issues and those things weren't going away. So it's unfortunate to hear. As we move on to Erie, and that was first and foremost, I want to thank everybody over both Gregs, Greg Anya and Greg Coleman over at the Erie Seawolves front office people. Salty Earth, great people. And what was it? I'm trying to think of the lady's name now. I'm drawing a blank. That was so nice to us yesterday when we were in the first floor.
The ticket taker.
Yeah.
I've kind of forgotten her name too. I'm so bad with names. But to your point, everybody was awesome to us. Yeah. From Greg and Greg to the Gabe Alvarez, gave us like 15 minutes of his time. Really fun guy to talk to. We're violating his trust by saying that he had some funny Keyshawn Johnson stories from when he was in USC back in the day, played Super Tecmo Bowl with him.
That was pretty sorry to hear.
Yeah, and the players were cool to talk to. We sat behind a pitcher for the first game, and he was fun to chat to, and yeah, just a great organization. Even like I said before, like who's the woman in the shop? Was it Christy? Was that her name?
Yeah, Christy. Yeah, she was really nice. She was the one that shipped out all our stuff. Which, by the way, we'll be giving that out away. There'll be winners for that next couple of days, and so there is an autographed Riley Green ball somewhere near my in the next 15 feet away from me. So luckily for everybody, perhaps they don't know where I live, so that's a good thing. But nevertheless, it was a great time, and again, even just some of the nuances of like they went to this place called Shirley's, and the video was over on our Twitter. And it was funny because it was when you first walk in, don't call me Shirley. If you've seen the movie Naked Gun, or I'm sorry, Airplane.
Yeah,
you were watching Police Squad, and that's what made me think of it for a second there. But nevertheless, had a great burger, had a Shirley burger. It's fantastic. But everybody over there, just great organization, and we got in just in time to watch Resolve to make a quick first inning, and then we saw something immaculate, Chris.
Yeah, nine pitch inning from Reese Olson, three strikeouts, an immaculate inning. First one I've ever seen in person, at least at the professional level. Yeah, he was really good in that start. Set a career high with 11 strikeouts. He, you know, lost the zone a little bit a few times later, and he got. I think he would have finished the game if not for the catcher's interference call against Dylan Digler.
Yeah, I didn't understand that call, by the way.
Well, it's just assuming the batter's. Bat hit Dingler's glove as he swung, so that's an automatic error on the catcher, and you get to first base. But he went 4 2/3, 11 strikeouts. Just all four of his pitches were working well. He was throwing 95, 96 there in the fifth inning, which is something that he wasn't doing last year when we saw him. He would touch 95, 96 in the first, and then by the fifth inning, he was kind of like 92, 94. So he's holding his velocity. Two distinct breaking balls that are both pretty nasty. The changeup's great. It's he remains a really interesting pitching prospect that, you know, I continue to kind of hedge my bets and say I think he's probably going to end up as like an Alex Lang-style reliever, which could be very valuable. But, again, they're going to keep trying to start him until they can't anymore, right? And he's pitched really well. And Liz was the name of the ticket taker, by the way.
Yes, Liz. Yes, thank you. Liz,
and then Savannah, the bartender up there, the stadium club, she was nice to us too. So, yeah, it was a great, great experience for us out there. And, You mentioned Shirley's. That's where we ate today. But we also went to the Plymouth Tavern last night, which was fun. Really inexpensive, but delicious bar food. And then we went earlier that day. We went to Dominic's, the suspiciously large Italian restaurant that serves the meatball omelets, which is not a combination of food I ever expected to hear. But they had it, and they're famous for it. So I had to try it, and it was tasty. So, but yeah, back to the baseball. That was a pretty dominant pitching performance we saw. And then we also saw, you know, one of the better offensive performances you're ever going to see that day from Kerry Carpenter, which kind of spurred our, you know, he's been performing well all year, but this was ridiculous. It was home run, double, double, home run, right? And he struck out in his fourth at bat. I'm like, what's wrong with you? But just a monster game from him.
Yeah, and one of the things that we – All right, what I'm about to say here next, I have to kind of tread carefully and not have my temper get the best of me. But so there's a couple of things that we've been talking about Kerry Carpenter for a while now, going back to when Brandon Day was on with us before the podcast or before the preseason, that there was some interesting stuff about Carpenter. I know Trevor Hoof's talked about him too as well. And it's been coming to fruition because last year around this time, he got out to a really good start before he tailed off. But the big difference was this in the same first 25, 24, 25 games, the stats were identical, virtually identical. Then he tailed off last year. This year, it's completed. He went on a tear. He's gotten six home runs in the last 12 games or something to that effect. He's hitting it, and it's not no cheapies either. I mean, he's getting some really you hear the contact a lot different. And overall, too, his just approach at the plate is one of the things we're trying to figure out is what – when we talked to Gabe Alvarez – he let us know that he worked on a swing in the offseason. And so we were trying to figure out, we were looking at the comparison of the videos. And what I noticed, and David, you're probably, the articles on Tiger Mother Report, I would love to hear your take on this. But what it looks like here, when he's finishing, he usually would set his arm up before he sets, and then he would raise his arm, then swing last year, but I noticed his elbow's up the entire time, and his swing looks a lot more level and looks more balanced through versus last year. Sometimes he looked a little off balance. That's just, again, from my amateur take point of view, scouting point of view on his swing mechanics, and something that's subtly noticeable, but you have to really look for it. But either way, he leads all Tiger minor leaguers in home runs with 11. And he's just been a double. He's also been, in terms of even doubles machines, but I think he's six doubles. So that's among the top three in all of the system. And this is huge because Detroit does not really have, in terms of among their top prospects at outfielder right now, because everything you look at what's going on in Lakeland, that's it. West Michigan, I mean, well, Ben Malgeri. Thank you. He's off to a good start, and he's been hitting the ball too. But we always saw, and even Gabe talked about this too, until you get to double A, that's a real true merit of where your skill set is. And so Harry Carpenter is about it. I mean, Jacob Robinson's not a prospect anymore, and for his past prospect status. And so, but either way, I came away really impressed with him, and also Andre Lispius, who really had a good weekend, and he's been continuing to hit the ball better. He's been drawing walks all season long, but he continues to, this weekend we saw him hit some opposite field home runs and during batting practice. I think he had one Friday.
Yeah, I think it was Saturday.
Yeah.
Just over, that's when we were down there for BP, and Saturday was the three doubles. He had three doubles on Saturday. Friday was the home run, I think you're right. But, yeah, you know, like, we talked about Kerry Carpenter's monster week. He went 9-for-20 with four doubles and three home runs. You know, Andre Lipsius went 9-for-20 with four doubles and two home runs. He was just almost as good, like, really close. And he walked more than Carpenter. And when we talked to Greg Gagne a while back, he said, you know, that's the thing with Lipsius. You just need to see more power production from him because, you know, if you don't hit for more power, you can't really play, especially if you're not going to be, you know, a true up the middle defender. I mean, he plays second base and third base, but that's not really his strong suit. I mean, his defense isn't, he's a quality defender, but he doesn't have much range. But yeah, so he's really helping out that lineup, and he and Carpenter are kind of pushing things right now. Daniel Cabrera had his best week of the season, which is, unfortunately, it's not really saying much. I think he had three hits, but it was 3-for-13 with a double, a triple, and five walks. But yeah, I mean, looking at him, he looked basically the same. We caught one strikeout where he flailed at a ball that was at his eyes. I was like, oh, that's a bummer. And that's just, it's just a weird offense right now because, you know, Carpenter and Lipsius are kind of, you know, Carpenter is not on any prospect list. Lipsius, if he's on it, is down like the 20 to 30 range. And like the three highly ranked guys or more highly ranked guys, Workman, Dingler, and Meadows, just keep struggling. We did see Meadows hit his first home run since what? Since April 14th or something like that, like 5 weeks since he's hit a home run. His first in double A. He caught a breaking ball that just broke right over the heart of the plate for him. But unfortunately, his swing looks a lot like it looked the last few years at West Michigan. There's just a little too much hand movement pre-swing. And we thought he'd kind of work that out. Maybe, you know, I'm willing to give all these guys more time, obviously. But yeah, he's still just kind of struggling to make consistent hard contact again. And then with Workman and Dingler, it's like, you know, all three of these guys made fine defensive plays over the course of the weekend. They're all, you know, above average to plus defenders. But you got Workman with a 42% strikeout rate this year, and Dingler's at like 35%. And you can't be a regular big leaguer if you're striking out that much in double A, unfortunately. It doesn't happen. So, again, we got to give these guys the full year. But, I mean, we caught Dingler had the Olympic rings in the game we were at on Friday. Five at-bats, five strikeouts. It was like, oh, man. And it just looked to me like the classic case of being caught in between. Like he was waiting for breaking balls, and then when he would get a fastball, he was just late on all of them because we know he can get a fastball. We've seen him perform well in person before, but it wasn't a great look at Dingler, unfortunately, at least offensively. He was fine defensively. He still called a great game. He did have the catcher's interference, but he he back picked a couple guys over the course of the weekend. He's a great catch and throw catcher. He just he's going to need to make more contact.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, especially for the game today, one thing I want to give to Dingler is he had an AB in the third inning. I got to find the spray chart again. But the one thing I'll say is that he's been grinding out at bats very – he's been grinding – like, as if you guys haven't – can't tell already, I'm a big believer in
the grinder.
If you can work counts and really get through at bats, then I feel like that's positive development. And
hey David, what's your favorite kind of sandwich?
A Reuben sandwich.
Oh, all right. I was hoping you'd go with grinder, but
delicious.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow there. You seem like you're a big fan of the guys who grind out at bats, which is, I agree, it's awesome when you see guys do that. Continue, sorry to interrupt.
It's like here's the chain. Third inning for Dylan Dingler, ball called strike, foul, 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 and then ultimately it came up with a single. So that's what happens when you make contact. And with the exception of I guess the only tough thing is that he grinded it out, but like he swung at a lot of pitches out of the zone. But he's still able to get the bat to it, and if he can stay in counts, that's good. But yeah, like I said, if you can work counts and come out with something positive, that's the positive development.
No, and you're right, David. That's something that doesn't go in the box score either, as far as just kind of something that's not mentioned. And in terms of the spray part, did you find that on a curiosity? That was on was that Fangraphs on that?
No, that's just game day for the minor leagues.
Game day, duh, of course. No, but there's go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say a couple things. Like, you know, we asked Gabe Alvarez after the game on Friday night. We said, you know, what do you say to Dingler after a game like that where he catches a great game, but he goes 0 for 5 at the plate? And he said he viewed it as a positive that Dingler was still able to play quality defense and not let his performance at the plate affect him. And I think that there's something to – I mean, maybe that's a glass half full view, but I do think there's something to that, because we talked about it many times that when you're a catcher, being the catcher is the most important part. And any offense is great. Eventually, you do have to hit a little bit. But, you know, he's hitting a little bit. It's just the strikeouts are a bit much. But then also, so Saturday, we went and we interviewed Alvarez. That was when he gave us, 15 minutes. And right after that, he was going to go and work with Dingler, I think, specifically, right? Or they were going to do some specific cage work with Dingler, who wasn't playing on Saturday. It was like, you know, so they're working on stuff constantly. And it's the things you don't – it's just there's so much more to it than just watching the games and watching the box score. And we all, I think, know this, but I think sometimes it helps to get a reminder that these guys are still working on stuff constantly.
Yeah, especially for the call-up crowd, like call them up. It's like there's a lot more to it. And there's nothing wrong with being enthusiastic about having somebody here, but it's – case in point, I mean, the idea of like when people look at Jonathan Scope's batting numbers or on base percentage and go, well, he sucks. It's like, well, did you really know that a couple of the balls he had, like I remember during the Baltimore series, he had some balls really hard. It's just unfortunately it was a bad spot. So those are a good sign. Even Javier Baez today with an opposite field home run, that's a good sign.
That was a clothesline too. If you watch that, it's like that. Yeah. The fan that caught it, it's like it was almost like Javi was playing catch with him. He's like, here, yeah. go stand in the outfield. I'm going to try and hit this right to you. You catch it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I just, Javi Baez doing anything offensively is a good sign. He's kind of like what we were talking about with these guys in ERA. You know, like this is spectacular defense, bring some offense, hopefully some power, and then we're talking. But we didn't. I mean, we talked about Olsen, we talked about the bats, we talked about the great people of Erie, the restaurants, all that good stuff. We haven't talked about some of the pitchers. We didn't see Wilmer Flores. We missed him by a day, but that was a pretty spectacular debut. And we talked about it on Thursday, I think. So if you want to hear our thoughts in more depth on that, you can go back and listen to that, the Woodward Tigers podcast. But yeah, I mean, it was electric stuff as usual, and the command needs to take a step forward a little bit for him to reach the majors. But yeah. He looks legit. And then the rest of the staff, Garrett Hill pitched there this week, and then he moved up. But Austin Bergner continues to perform, and he's a guy who we didn't really know the velo on Bergner. It's been in the low to mid-90s before. But he, I think two starts ago, he took a perfect game into the sixth inning. And in this start this week, he retired 16 batters in a row at one point from, like, the one out in the first all the way into the sixth inning. And it turns out he's just working with an 89 to 92 mile an hour fastball that, that hitters can't really get a hold of yet because he's got a changeup and a curveball that both show signs of being above average. And it's like, this is another instance of them kind of, I don't know, you don't want to say just finding pitchers, but really kind of helping pitchers be their best selves, at least in the minors to this point. Because I did not expect this from Bergner. We all thought he was going to be a reliever, right? And maybe he still will be a reliever down the road, but he went from relieving in the minors to suddenly being one of the better starters on the team in Double A, which is kind of wild. And who else pitched? Adam Wolf had an awesome... You're talking about Wolf?
What?
Did you mention Adam Wolf?
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off here, story, but going back to Erie, I wanted to give some credit to two guys for Erie today. That's Adam Wolf, and also I don't know how to pronounce his name, Yai Chentov.
Yai Chentov.
He threw a pretty productive inning today.
He's one of the more consistent relievers.
Chentov.
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty dominant inning of work today, two strikeouts, and also Adam Wolf had a very, very dominant outing strikeout wise, eight. I took a note on this. I have to find it. Here, if you guys have a point you want to touch on while I look for this, by all means.
But I know that he had eight strikeouts in four innings, right? And yeah, which is interesting because you don't necessarily think of him as like a dominant strikeout guy, but he was doing work. I think he probably would have preferred to go more than four innings than get those eight strikeouts because, as we talked, I think before the show, I don't know if we mentioned on the show, but Erie's bullpen ended up getting kind of taxed this week, and it wasn't necessarily because the starters. I mean, the starters didn't work super deep, but they haven't been working very deep all year. It's a lot of them are on pitch counts, but the bullpen just kept getting rocked. We saw, I want to say, they gave up like seven or eight runs in the final three innings total in the two games we were there, and they gave up 12 runs I think on Tuesday. The bullpen alone, and these aren't like these are veteran arms like Gerson Moreno and Shea Spitzbarth. And Zach Houston, we saw this week. And who else did we see? We saw Nick Kuzia. And we saw Brendan White pitch a little bit. And so today they had to, in a tie game in the extra innings, use John Rossoff, their catcher, as a pitcher, which we saw Lansing do that a couple weeks ago. And it's just like, it makes sense. The games don't count. So they go obviously to the players, but at some point you go, we don't have anybody healthy or ready to go. We don't get anybody hurt. So sorry, John, go out there and take one for the team. And he did.
Yeah, Raj, Gerson Moreno got an inning in today. Are you happy?
Yeah, I wasn't happy when I saw on Friday. It was Friday when I saw him, where he's it's just a – the thing that we were talking about, that he'll have a really good outing, and then just all of a sudden the train goes unraveling a bit. His fastball got up to 95, 96.
I think he touched 98.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. He did touch 98. Yeah, his fastball is just it's a matter of command, and he lacks it. And as soon as he loses his command, it's over. And we saw that when he got a couple walks, and he was getting – when he got tattooed, when he got hit, he got hit. And so – I don't want same thing. Anyway, but I thought that his off speed stuff, he had no command of it whatsoever on Friday. And so, I didn't get a chance to check. How did he do today?
I'm sorry. I found my note on Wolf, so I was just reading that. But, one inning, no hits, unearned run, a walk, and a strikeout.
That sounds like a typical inning from him currently.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a Moreno.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to hear this interesting little tidbit on Adam Wolf that I found from his outing, with the exception of four outs over his four-inning outing, all the outs that he did record over that outing were strikeouts, which is kind of like a I'm going to take that as kind of like a neutral, not like a positive or a negative. It's like, unfortunately, the fourth inning kind of unraveled for Wolves today, but like, he was being aggressive and he was going after guys, and that's something you really really like to see. It's like, if you can just tone it down and know where to not go for the strikeout per se. Like, I know it's pitchers love striking guys out, but there's also times where you have to try and be efficient. And yeah, but it's nice to see that he was being aggressive with hitters.
Especially the fact that as a lefty, with a guy who, I mean,
he's more like 88 to 91. He's like a Tyler Alexander lefty.
Yeah, touch and feel with some movement he has to go on. That's good. You, as a lefty, you need every advantage you can get. And they played a pretty good Fisher Cats team. The Toronto has a couple of their top prospects in there in Martinez. So yeah, there was no slouch. I mean, that team kept coming. That was one thing about, in terms of Friday and Saturday, they were competitive. They were very competitive. And no matter when Erie was getting ahead, the Fisher Cats came back and did a
– yeah.
So
– they battled back a lot. Yeah, we had a great time in Erie, and thanks again. Yeah. But, yeah, let's head to West Michigan, where we also usually have great times.
Yes.
And lots of good people there, too.
Chris, I'm not ready to leave here yet.
Oh, okay.
There's one more site I want to see before we leave.
Fair enough.
Just to end it on a positive note, I want to talk about one last stat for Kerry Carpenter, which I want to say is pretty awesome, is that hitting .408 on balls in play and also .388 on base percentage at the same time. So even though it's 10 walks to 43 strikeouts, it's pretty fascinating to see with getting as much consistent playing time as Carpenter's getting. It's nice to see him just absolutely hammering the balls, it seems, right now.
Yeah, we were discussing that because one of the big changes is his batting average this year, right? It's higher. I mean, he's hitting for more power too, but I think Raj was, you know, really digging into the stats and found that his fly ball rate was actually, was it down? I think it was down. Yeah. His line drive rate, they weren't big differences, but his fly ball rate was down and his line drive rate was up, which is, you know, you never go wrong hitting line drives for the most part. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm ready now.
All right, so let's go on to West Michigan as they are on the road this week against Fort Wayne. And this is something I was talking about with Chris earlier today, that this is not the typical Fort Wayne team that we're used to seeing. The Padres usually have this team stacked with prospects, and it seemed like they're a little down. They're coming in at the same time with West Michigan as one of the, in terms of record-wise, very similar records. But props to the Whitecaps who, again, this is they split the – no, I'm sorry. They did win the series this week against. It's the second series in a row they've won, and now they're just 18-21 on the season, and they look like they're getting back to playing close to .500 ball. But there's a couple. I mean, in terms of the offense, what they're able to do, they got two shutouts. They had three shutouts this week. So one was on Wednesday, one was on Saturday, and one was today. As we'll go start with Wednesday, 9-0 win over the Tin Caps, and that was a combination of Cole Keith, 3-for-5. Wenciel Perez, 3-for-4. Josh Crouch, who you told me, Chris, you admittedly have he's growing in your
admiration. I'm driving the crotch wagon.
He's driving the crotch wagon. And then Gardena's final appearance in West Michigan that was just, who knew? But in terms of Gabe Sequeira, we'll get to him. I wrote an article about him, Jeremy, on
Motor City Bengals.
Yeah, it was MCB. It was one of my last articles at MCB. You find it. I talked about his delivery, and I'm a big fan of him and what he's trying to do. And just simply went from overhand to sidearm, completely changed him as a reliever. So, but yeah, that was a game where, as long as these two guys in Bam Melgeri, he had two hits, and he had a catch today. We'll get to that in a second, but. Again, this is a team that the offense has just suddenly woke up a little bit recently, and we weren't sure that was going to happen based off some of the things. But Chris, Wenciel Perez is continuing to elevate himself.
Yeah, you know, I was looking up some stats just for fun and you know, breaking it down. So what's he hitting? He went 8-for-22 this week with 2 doubles, 2 homers, 3 walks, 3 steals. He's now hitting .283 with a double-digit walk rate. in an ISO of over 280. And there are fewer than 10 22-year-olds in minor league baseball who can say that. And most of them are like legit prospects, like the McLean kid who was just out of I don't know why I forgot his name, but
UCLA, are you telling Matt McLean?
Yeah, Matt McLean is one of them. There are some legit prospects who are doing what Wenzel Perez is doing, and like Carson Williams, I think, was a shortstop from the Rays. So yeah, his numbers are absolutely bonkers this year, and it's kind of fun to see because it was totally unexpected. You know, he's doing a little bit of everything on offense, but you know, I think if we're going to talk about the Whitecaps offense this week, there's really there's one name to talk about, and it was the Jake Holton show. And I don't know if I feel like David is kind of the high man on Jake Holton. So I don't know if you have anything particularly you want to say about his week.
Oh yeah, it's today hit a home run today, which the at bat was quick. He was aggressive, but overall just I've been a huge proponent of Jake Holton. I know he was he had to fill a slot for Erie recently. He didn't get much playing time there, but I'll pull up his recent games, but I'm happy to see that he went deep today. But one note that I want to touch on is a man that desperately needs a win, and he got one today in Ty Madden, who had a pretty fantastic outing. And I'm gonna look up the game logs for Jake Holton.
I was wanting to go in chronological order with that, but
I can tell you that Jake Holton this week went 6-for-18 with 5 home runs. Including 4 games in a row, yesterday, the day before, 7 walks, 10 RBIs. If he's not the Midwest League Player of the Week, then we quit, because that's one of the best weeks you'll ever see.
Oh yeah, it looks like it. Only struck out 8 times, 8 times this month overall, and only 4 times in the last week. That's pretty amazing to see, because like. When you're in the lower minor league levels, all you want to do is just impress your club and just start hitting the snout out of the ball. But when you get start again, it's all about the grind. When you put together solid at bats and do something with it, even if you're hitting a opposite field out to right field as a right handed batter, that's like something that I personally as a hitting coach would love to see. And like as long as you're putting the bat on the ball, then that's fantastic, and I think that's looks like what Holt's been doing so far.
Yeah, you touched on Cole Keith, Raj, and the Whitecaps offense has been pretty good all year long. We've talked about how they like despite their terrible record at one point, they were like the best offense in the league. And Cole Keith, it's kind of getting boring now to see him go. You know, hit 340 for the entire week. What did he do this week? He went 8-for-22 with a double, a triple, 3 walks. He's hitting 317. It's just what he does now. He's going to spray the ball around. He's going to get hits and get on base. He's a guy that for all the talk about, hey, when's he going to get called up? When's he going to get called up? I think he's a guy that will definitely get a call up at some point in the next month or so because. He's a high priority prospect for them, and you don't want to say he's mastered this level, but he looks pretty darn good and he's been pretty consistent. So, and then, if I may talk about my man, Josh Crouch.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I've talked about this before. I saw one at bat in spring training. I was like, hey, I like that because he did that thing where he was gearing up for a fastball, started his swing and noticed that it was a breaking ball during his swing and made the adjustment and drove a double to right field. And I was like, that's really advanced hitting for anybody to see that. And so I don't know what he's hitting on the year, but this week he went.
In terms of the year, in terms of how his numbers look for the year, he is bad. I just had it. There it is. Okay. So, never mind. It's gone.
I know he went 8-for-16 this week with a double and I think 3 walks. And I guess, you know, what I like about him is that he's a catcher and he can hit. I think he's going to hit. I don't know if he's going to hit at the highest levels. But
351
on the year. Yeah. And, you know, he's a college player. I think he was a 4-year college player. So you would kind of expect him to be doing well, or you at least hope that you're going to do well in the low minors. And, but yeah, what I like about him defensively is he actually seems like a pretty good receiver too. He's kind of the subtle framing that you can watch him try. And I think he's a decent reason why some of that pitching down there has been good. And he's got a strong arm. He's thrown out a bunch of guys this year, or at least a handful of guys that I've seen. Be like that. The one big issue so far, I think, is that he hasn't hit for a ton of power. He did hit a bomb at the game we were at, the game I was at in Lansing. But I think that might be his only home run of the year. And like I said, only one double this week. So, you know, that might limit his ceiling at higher levels if pitchers aren't afraid of him doing damage against them. But I thought he was known for power down at, where was it, UCF?
Yep.
So I don't know. He's just a guy, like I said, I wouldn't like put him in the Tigers top 10, top 15, top 20 prospects, but I do think I put him in our top 30. I think I put him in the back end just because if you're a catcher and you can catch and you can hit, I think you'll find a job eventually. So,
especially like in a time of baseball we're in right now where like we're pretty desperate for catchers in general. It's like touching briefly on like Major League Baseball, it's like you can only count a handful of catchers that are actually making an impact on their team, and they're not just like defense first guys. But yeah, it's like especially with the Tigers, we have a lot of I'm not gonna say our catching depth is deep, but like it's noticeable. It's like you see a lot of especially with Dylan Dingler. It's like I think I mentioned this on the last show, like when you're a catcher, it's pretty hard to balance offense and defensive work because it's safe to say that 5 out of the 7 days of the week you're not necessarily focusing on hitting, but like blocking drills and framing drills and just all sorts of defensive work to make you a better catcher. But yeah, it's just when you're able to not just hit for power, but at least be able to work the count and be able to hit well as a catcher, it's hard. It's very hard. And it's nice to see we got some guys in the system that are doing that.
Yeah. And maybe Dingler's a cautionary tale for us here Crouch Dingler hit really well, like amazingly well in high A last year. Like, oh, this dude is too good for this level. And it's been a struggle for him in double A. So there's a big leap there. So maybe the same thing will happen to Crouch, but I don't know. I just think he's a name people should know at least. And we'll keep following him and maybe down the road, he'll move his way to prospectdom or you know, disappear. But yeah, I mean, the offense was solid this week. You mentioned Ben Malgeri. That's Trevor Huth's guy. He was the one who's been, pumping him up. And he got off to a really slow start, but he's been one of their best hitters for the last month or so. And he's, you mentioned, Raj, he made a really nice kind of sprawling catch. It wasn't like a full dive, but he ran forever. That was Saturday night, I think. I think it was off Robert Hassel fly ball. And he went from basically right center all the way to left center to make the catch. And it's like, yeah, this dude he's a plus runner. Looks like he could be a plus defender. And he's hitting. Again, that's kind of a Crouchian profile, right? Like, not the speed, but like these are guys, what you want to see from your college draft picks. You don't know if they're prospects, but please come in and perform in the low minors so we can move you up eventually and see what you are. So, you know, that's the offense has been good.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, you touched on Ben Malgeri. I guess the question I have is like, he has the plus speed, but do you think he has the defensive awareness to back him up with it though? Because that's the one thing I always want to see with outfielders. Like, when a fly ball is hit to an outfielder, in my opinion, the one thing I want to see him do is be able to track a fly ball well. And like, because I've seen my fair share of like fly balls to the outfield that are deep, but like you see the outfielder backing up towards the wall and you know, their spatial awareness is off and you see him just like making the catch, but like smashing into the wall at the same time. So like, yeah, with Malgeri, like does he do a decent job at knowing where the wall is?
Yeah. You know, I haven't like, you know, zeroed in on him a ton, but every time I've watched him, he looks like a natural center fielder. He looks like he's got the range. He's got the feel. He knows where he is. He I think there are a couple times it gets pretty deep there in center and at LMCU that he might have, you know, could have stopped and played the ball off the wall or whatever. But I think that comes with, for a lot of guys, it comes with just learning the park after a few months or so. But no, he looks like a guy who could legitimately play center field to me, which is good.
Oh yeah, and after doing some research, I want to give a little bit of a shout out to bounce back to Jake Holton, who has he has 9 hits right now since his return to West Michigan. So props to Mr. Jake Holton, and of those 7, 5 of them are home runs. See, he's tearing the cover off the ball right now.
Yeah, for sure. And so, I mean, that's the offense for the most part. It was kind of rough weeks for some of the other Myers. Didn't have a big week. Brian Packard didn't play much, so you never know with him. He's dealt with some injuries in the past. But the pitching, you touched on it with Ty Madden. Ty Madden pitched twice. In the first game, I don't know, Ty Madden, just in general, he doesn't look 100% to me. Like, I'm not saying he's injured, but the first few starts this year, he was looking kind of electric, like fastball into the upper 90s, really sharp breaking balls, and he just looks a little sluggish to me, but he gutted out five innings in that first start on Tuesday, and what is it, seven hits, three earned runs, and then today, that's another one that I was watching that while Roger's driving, and it was another one where he wasn't necessarily dominant by any means, but again, got through five innings, and then one thing that we saw that we really wanted to mention, which I thought was a good sign, is there in the fifth, I think he had been on second and third with one out. And, you know, this is, he's coming up toward the end of his pitch count. You know, they've got these guys on limits. And he got out of it. He struck out a guy and then got a weak grounder. And it was like, that's, I don't know, I just like to see things like that. A guy can buckle down and get the big outs when he needs to. And I don't remember what the score was at the time. It may have been like 2-0. They eventually went on to win 8-0, I think. But it was nice to see. And that, like you mentioned, David, he got the win, which is always, you know, wins and losses aren't a huge thing, particularly in the minor leagues. But I'm sure as a pitcher, you want to feel like you helped your team win, and getting that actual win probably makes you feel a little bit better than going, yeah, I think I helped them.
Oh, so. Yeah. And you touched on the fifth inning that Madden had. And again, going back to my Walmart color analysis, like that he allowed a leadoff double from Adam Kerner to start his inning. And I guess one thing I like to see from pitchers personally is like when you get into trouble right off the bat, especially after having four solid innings like he did, it's like mm-hmm. You start to get in your own head a little bit because like you're like, oh, now I have to work through three outs with a runner on second. And I'm sure like how's his pitch count looking by that fifth inning? Was it getting up there by that point or?
Yeah, they actually had somebody warming in. They had Jack O'Loughlin warming in the fourth, I think. He was coming up on, I think, a pitch limit in the fourth just for the inning and then for the game in the fifth. So, yeah, and you know that as a pitcher. You know the guy's warming up back there. You know you can't make too many mistakes. Okay. So,
yeah. I'm sorry.
No, just the small things that might not be there in the box score, again, like we always say, that are just nice to see, give you a little insight into what a player can and can't do.
And that's the thing. It's like that adds on to it. I'm going to talk about Jack O'Loughlin in a second, but knowing that you're on an innings limit and you see the guy in the bullpen, you get in your head thinking like, oh my god, like every next thing that happens to this batter could be my last batter of the outing. So mm-hmm. it was nice to see him keep a level head with it. It looked like he was aggressive with the exception of Corey Rozier. If that's how you pronounce his name, six pitch battle with him. But yeah, it's like nice seeing get out of it at the end of the day and putting together a good outing.
For sure. And then yesterday was Dylan Smith pitching. That was his start of the year or start of the only start of the week, I think. And it was kind of a classic Dylan Smith outing. We put up his outing, I think this morning while we were driving. That was me. Again, Roger was driving. So I was the one cutting it up we weren't putting anybody at danger for the most part. But Dylan Smith, it was like a classic Dylan Smith. I feel like this is his outing every week. It's five innings, like three hits, no walks, four strikeouts. You watch him, there's not a ton of swing and miss, but he keeps guys off balance and he gets fairly weak contact. And I don't know, he looks good to me. I still am not seeing a ton of changeups. I'd like to see more, but the two breaking balls look above average and the fastball's nice. So I don't know, he looks like another – I think he's probably a top 10 prospect in the system, if not top 12.
What was his velocity looking like, Dylan Smith, in his last outing?
He's been typically – so when we caught him in – didn't we catch him? That was the game we both went to, Raj, in Lansing. He was 92, 95 – or no, that was the game I went to. Oh, he was 92, 95. We caught – who did we see? Flores. Yeah, we got the two-thirds of an inning for Flores. Smith was 92-95 the whole game when I was there with his fastball. And I've never seen him bump above that 95. And I don't know if I've seen him go below 91. So it's legit. You know, it's nothing super fast, but the hitters don't seem to, in the game I saw, they squared him up the second time around. But before that, you know, he seems to be improving on that too. And everybody got hit hard in Lansing. I think that hitters just see the ball really well there because there's a giant green wall in the center field, kind of like America. But
The one thing that like I want to say is pretty impressive, and it's like the one thing I always look for with pitchers when you're trying to decide on like is he ready to make that next step to the next league, and that's what I think a lot of the young pitchers we have in the system are doing really well right now. Matter of fact, and that's just like I don't know if the pitching coaches do this in the minor league systems, but deciding like what half of the strike zone that you want to focus on in this particular outing. I think honestly, that's one thing that our pitchers have been doing really well. It's like, especially if like you can command your fastball on both sides of the plate, and especially if you're looking at it low as well. Like if you can put the fastball in both corners low, or if you can command both sides of the plate, and it's nice to see all our pitchers doing that. And also, I think that's what Jack O'Loughlin did really well. It really good as well. If you want to touch on that,
you know, I didn't even watch him pitch. I'll be honest. So.
He is efficient. I wrote it down somewhere here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only two strikeouts, didn't allow a hit though. It looked like he was pretty quick with his outing. Yeah. Overall, it was pretty impressive. And I like to see it coming out of the bullpen as well. Cause like, I know he's been getting some starts recently, but yeah, he certainly had a noticeable outing.
Nice. Yeah, and then you know, Cater Montero had a nice start too, right, Roger? Was that the Wednesday? Was he the starter on Wednesday? The game you were talking about?
Yeah, he was the starter on Wednesday, which we went 15 minutes ago, and now I don't know how we ended up here, but nevertheless, that was something that I was trying to go through. The reason why I like going in the way that you go through the schedule, so that way you could go through each performance and kind of sum up everything, and so.
That's right. My fault. I derailed you because I thought we had to talk about Jake Holton and his five home runs.
No. It's fine.
We can finish up in Lakeland. I don't know. Do we?
Let's finish up in Lakeland here. As Lakeland, in terms of having a week this week, it's funny. I saw a headline that said something along the lines of their hated rival, the Jupiter Hammerheads, and I just kind of laughed at myself, but I just thought about the context of the conversation of where in terms of lower A, for example, for Lakeland or anything like that, to have a rivalry, it just kind of cracks me up a little bit. But nevertheless.
Yeah, that's funny. I've never thought of them having a rival at all. Yeah, I feel bad, but I haven't. Like,
yeah,
who cares?
pretty much. And again, it's another typical week for Carlos Mendoza as he continues to hit. He had. It's funny. I was looking up the stats for among the minor leaguers and who led all the minor leagues in hits. So I was thinking to myself, he has to be up there, right? And he only got 28 hits. It doesn't include today. Does not include today. But I was looking at his batting average, looking at some of the things he does to get on base, and his OPS is 877, and he's been playing a little bit everywhere, third base, outfield. He's playing a lot of the outfield this week. But him and Isaac Pacheco, I thought had pretty decent weeks in terms of just Pacheco. We're looking for really progress among that. And Mangel Sequeira, too, had a really good week. And that really is the headline for the week. But the first pitcher that noticed that came out was Gary Bernhardt on Wednesday. 6 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, and 9 strikeouts. And the Lakeland rotation, which we don't really talk about too much in terms of like comparatively speaking to West Michigan or Erie, for example, I thought I had again, just in terms of looking at some of the numbers, you look at low A numbers and kind of go, oh, well, you know, a lot of the walks and stuff like that, because a lot of the kids are trying to aim the throw. I thought they had a good week. I thought the pitching staff did a really good job this week.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Lakeland won the first four games of the week. And then they unfortunately lost both ends of a doubleheader today. They were rained out, they were supposed to have a doubleheader yesterday, and the second game got delayed by rain. But I think you're right. I mean, they drafted so many pitchers last year in the top 10 rounds and just in general that, that they were bound to. There's just a couple guys there, and like you mentioned, Burhan, he shouldn't be in low A. He's got four pitches and is into the low 90s. Like, he knows how to pitch. He should probably be in high A for, but they need to get him innings, and there's only so many innings you can give. And same with Brant Herder. He should be in high A, and he probably will be soon. But yeah, and then they've got those other, like the younger guys. Jackson Jobe, of course, is the one who's going to get all the attention, but Carlos Pena is pretty young, and he's, you know, he's a touch and feel lefty, but he went out and pitched well. So yeah, it's a solid rotation down there. They just, again, I think a lot of it is we don't see them on TV very often. So we just kind of, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind at times. And really also just everybody only cares about Jobe, I think, unfortunately.
Or Campos. I mean, Roberto Campos also gets that kind of like, everybody's wondering what's.
Yeah. Or there's definitely the hitters they care about, but among the pitching staff, but yeah, like, you mentioned Sakura. I mean, Lynn Henning was down there and actually was like, the Tigers have a good one in Sakura. That's like, all right. Well, I mean, yeah, we've been tweeting about him for, I don't know, most of the month because, and he's a guy that, we've tweeted him for a couple of years, but because he went bonkers last year with 11 home runs. But in the month of May, he's just doing a ton of damage. And the big thing is he's still not walking. He's going to be an aggressive hitter, but he's cut his strikeout rate by like 20%. It's kind of insane. Probably not 20%, but he went from like a 30% strikeout guy to a 15% strikeout guy this month. And it's one of those things where suddenly he's putting the bat on the ball and he's doing a lot of damage. And I don't know, what were his stats this week? Let me just look real quick. 10 for 24 with three doubles, two homers, eight RBIs. But then, yeah, no walks and four strikeouts. And that's just to get back to Carlos Mendoza briefly. You're looking for him thinking he's going to be on the top of the hit list. It's probably not because he walks so much.
Yeah,
he is an on-base machine. He is one of two guys in the system with more walks than strikeouts. And he has, let me see, what does he have? Yeah, he walks almost 1.5 times per every strikeout. 23% walk rate for Carlos Mendoza, which is, tops in the system. So, I don't know. He's another guy that somebody asked us, you know, should he be moved up? And it's like, yeah, he can probably handle any level above this, basically, with that eye. It's just a matter of, you know, how he's viewed within the organization. And I don't think there's a huge priority there for whatever reason.
Yeah, he's a lefty bat too, which is always nice to see. But he doesn't hit for a lot of power. So that's where, I mean, it's a case here where a walk rate's good. Don't get me wrong, but you also need some power. It'd be nice if he had a little bit of power to back that up. But I thought that the ability to play both third base and second base and the outfield does pretty well. And not to mention, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but defensively, he's not a lot of errors. He's not a big liability out there.
No, not at all. I think there's a lot to like about him. He's pesky. He gets on base. He hits. Like, he knows how to hit. He steals bases. He's a quality defender all over the place. So it's just, like you said, that there just hasn't been much pop and very little over the fence power, I think, in his career, which is going to hold you down a little bit. But I don't know, if you're going to be a utility guy and you've got all these other skills, then, you know, just keep an eye on him. Right. I mean, it's the Harold Castro slow play plan. Just see if he's sticking around in like 3 years and maybe he'll make the majors. But if not, he's just, you know, he's been a quality hitter for Lakeland for sure. And a key part of that offense.
Another guy that made their debut this week for Lakeland was Frank Velarez, who is a second baseman who just jumped up from Gulf Coast League, rookie league that was for last year, and just started playing this year, or just joined Lakeland rather. And he was signed a couple weeks, assigned from low A, or rookie complex ball. I don't know why I can't talk all of a sudden, to Lakeland. And so I don't know too much about him, but hopefully he's one of those guys that I'll get to see a chance of June 1st through the 4th. So I'm looking forward to that trip and going out there and see what's at. But other than that, in terms of Lakeland, I was trying to think of anybody else that had a week, but looks like as far as, you know, I forgot about Kingston Liniac still being in the system. Like, I feel like he's been in Lakeland for 5 years now.
It does, unfortunately. Yeah, and he was the fourth rounder in 2018, and I think he has been. And I don't know if he may have gotten to West Michigan briefly when they were low A. I might be wrong there, but Matty Lou and Rod Carew.
Yeah.
I think if Carlos Mendoza were that good, then he'd probably be hitting like 500 with the walk rates. But still, Roberto Campos hit his second home run of the year, which is nice to see. You know, he's been hitting the ball hard. He just needs to lift it more. And Isaac Pacheco kind of had a quiet, good week again. I think, what did he do? He went 8 for 21 with a homer and a walk. just a lot of singles. And I think his homer may have been opposite field. I don't know. But, they've got some decent hitters there. We're just kind of waiting on the return of Christian Santana, who was showing some impressive power but wasn't hitting much. And that's – hopefully he's back for you when you're down there.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing I want to say about Campos. He's been hitting the ball hard recently, but there's – I had two things I want to talk about was the ABs that Sequeira had, which going – even though he went 0 for the doubleheader, I had a note on that. But also with Campos, which is actually my version of trivia today that I have for you guys. So over the course of all his at-bats in the doubleheader, Campos saw 13 pitches in total in that doubleheader. Both of you want to take a guess at how many swings he had
of those 13, 13 pitches?
Yep.
I'm going to go with 11.
I'll take the under. I'll take 10.
He had 3.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, and one of the swings was a ground ball, and the other two were swinging strikes. So I think that was one thing that was a little concerning for me is, there's such things being aggressive. Like, yeah, he had 2 walks in game 1. But if there's one thing I want to see from Campos is, you touched on it last week, Chris. Like, you want to see him hitting more fly balls.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's like, honestly, I just like to see him getting after balls in general. It's like, it's a nice thing to have a decent knowledge of the strike zone. It's like, I'd like to see him swinging the bat a little bit more. It's like, be more confident with the swings. Cause even though one of those 3 swings was a ground ball out, you can still try and give it your all. It's like, I'd even like to see him just like totally put everything into it on one swing. It's like, even though he might look silly, something might come out of it. But yeah.
It could be the case where they ask him to just kind of work on his swing a little bit, maybe not swing as much, because you guys were mentioning earlier some of the – every pitcher has a specific thing they have to work on. And with Campos, maybe they're trying to say, look, try to take some more pitches in this – try to take more pitches, work the counts a little more, and see – and be less – more selective about what you're going to hit. Because if there's one thing about – it seems like with the Tigers they've done, what we've seen this with the pitcher side, perhaps even on the hitter side of things, they could be just telling that because – Campos' nature has always been to be aggressive, from my understanding, Chris. I mean, based off of some of the strikeout rates we saw last year, in his first year of pro ball. So,
there could be. We never know what instruction they're giving these guys, unfortunately. So it could be something like I don't know. I don't think we have pitch level data, like what pitches he was getting, but it could be like we only want you to swing at changeups or something like that. And like, oh, come on, seriously. You never know. I don't think the Tigers have been known to do that kind of coaching in the past, but we don't know now what the development team is like. So, but yeah, I mean, you could tell by both of our guesses, like we just assumed he was going to be swinging at everything because that's kind of
right.
Has been his nature. Certainly that's the, like Sequeira, that's the issue with him is being aggressive, but I've been pleasantly surprised by Campos's. Like his OPS is lower now in low A than it was in the GCL, which you kind of expect, but I think his walk rate's probably up a little bit. And I think his strikeout rate might be down a little bit. I haven't checked, but I've been fairly pleased with his progress. I just think that it's going to be a fairly long process with him just because, you know, he defected when he was 14, 13. He's just kind of hidden away for 3-4 years.
Yeah, the Tigers certainly, From what I've read about Campos, the Tigers certainly held him close to the vest during like the international signing period. That's the famous thing about him. But I also had a note I want to touch on really quick about Sequeira. Is it? Mm-hmm. It went over for the doubleheader today, which is like it's rough to see. Actually, no, never mind. He had 1 hit. But if there's one thing I really want to respect about the doubleheader he had was again, I'm gonna say this again. He was the grinder of the day for Lakeland, and I don't think he had an at bat over the course of the doubleheader today that was like under five pitches. I think give or take like one at bat. So he had one today that was like seven or eight pitches, and that was something I really honestly like to see, because like even if you're coming out of it with nothing, you still have like, you can say that you weren't just like flailing at three straight pitches. Like mm-hmm. you gave it your all, and that was something I like to see from him, especially in single A ball as well. Because usually, I don't know. I guess from what I've seen, you start to see a little bit more plate discipline once you get to like West Michigan or Erie.
Well, yeah, you kind of need it because the pitchers are gonna know where their pitchers are going more than that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fairly clear that he's seeing the ball a lot better this month than he did last month and than he did last year for the most part, which I think I take as a positive sign, because that's one of the things that we always kind of view as being innate, that sort of plate discipline and pitch recognition. I do think you can improve pitch recognition for sure, but you know, plate discipline is kind of tough to fix. So I think, I'm pleased by his progress. And again, he's another guy that we're going to monitor as the season goes along. I don't think we're going to see Campos or Santana or Sequeira in West Michigan at any point this year. And I don't think we should, or Pacheco for that matter. Just give these guys a full year and, let them grind it out. And we'll see them next year, hopefully.
Yeah. To be fair, we said the same thing about Wilmer Flores as well, but he did decent for Erie, but we'll see.
You got to. I think this is a different kind of case where you have to keep these guys together. As far as Flores, I thought he would hit the double A a little later than he expected, maybe in June or July.
I think we've assumed that Flores, Madden, and Smith would all hit double A at some point this year if they stay healthy, just because they're all relatively advanced and it's a different story. Like we don't expect Job to leave Lakeland either, unless something goes crazy and he strikes out like 15 guys, but that doesn't seem to be where his development is going right now.
So. Yeah. And as far as, again, one of those things we can always look at later on and just in terms of progressing these guys, it's good to keep them together. I really think that. And Campos to be one of the team's leaders in hits, and that's a sign for his age. So as far as articles go, go to Tiger Mile Report, TigersMLReport.com. Check out the Kerry Carpenter piece. Tomorrow we're going to have the weekly recap series is going to be back. Scouting reports, we're just finishing ironing up a little bit of how we want to format. So there'll be a couple of reports up this week. And yeah, next week I'll be down in Lakeland. We'll be doing I'll probably do something from Lakeland at some point next week. I just got to figure that part out. But we're back next Sunday. Hopefully, we'll start a little earlier. Hopefully, we're not road.
Memorial Day.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Memorial Day. So, no show next week. No show next week. We'll, Memorial Day is Monday. We'll figure it out. There'll be something. Like I said, there'll be plenty of content over at TigersMLReport.com. We're going to submit our top prospects list. Chris has got his done. David has his done. I just talked to Jake over the weekend. He'll have his done. And Jake is a busy man, and he said he will be coming on to contribute regularly as well. So thanks so much for watching us on YouTube. If you watch us live this evening, and don't forget to download, check out the podcast. And Jeremy, thank you for being a faithful listener. We definitely appreciate it. And again, shout out to everybody over in Erie for a fantastic weekend. And I look forward to going back out there again. It's a town that's kind of grew on me a little bit, because this is my fourth time I've been out. Well, I was telling Greg the stories about out there for a wedding, but that's another story for another day. That's my brother's wedding. So shout out to my brother, Ricky, or excuse me, the Blakesy family in Erie, Pennsylvania. They are some good people. So we'll see you next week. Have a good week, everybody.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.